Hi, my name is Charlotte Armitage and this is Objects. Objects is a podcast that takes you on a journey through before, during and after care using the objects that mean the most to care experienced people. Who Cares Scotland is inviting you to come on this journey with us by listening to our podcast. Hello and welcome to Objects, a Who Cares Scotland podcast. Today's guest is Sheila Shamai. Sheila is a care experienced mum and a social policy PhD student. Her research is focused on care experienced parents. Sheila is currently a promise officer for Children in Scotland. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I know you've had a bit of a nightmare trying to get here with the trains, but it's great to finally have you and we're here getting it done. So before we get started, just for everyone listening, just tell me a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Sheila, as you said. I am a mother. I think that's my most exciting sort of role. I'm a mum of three. I've got a nearly six-year-old, a three-year-old and a two-year-old. And also, as you said, I'm doing my PhD and that's looking at care experienced parents in Scotland and England. And yeah, I recently started as the Promise Officer for Children in Scotland.
And you're moving back to Scotland as well as part of that. How exciting.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Like, I can't wait.
Yeah, amazing. So we're obviously here to do objects and we're about to get started on the actual conversation. But I wanted to do first is ask you a little bit about what it was like finding your objects. So everyone obviously goes on their own process and some find it easier than others. So what was your process and how did you ultimately decide what to bring today with you?
Yeah, I think the easiest object to select was my final one for time after leaving the care system. And actually, I had a couple that I could pick from. And then for during the care system, I think that one I struggled a little bit. But eventually, I figured out, okay, what I could bring. The one that I struggled with was time before that. I think it's just a bit difficult sometimes actually physically, like finding a physical object. And then I thought, okay, I'll look around for pictures. And actually, I don't have that many pictures. I've not found one, but I'm pretty sure I've got some somewhere. But it was just a struggle to try and find something. And actually, I think for me, the question that I was asking myself was, whatever object I'm going to find, what story do I want to tell for before going into the care system? And I think I'm still figuring it out. I'm not quite sure what to say about it. So yeah, it was a bit of a struggle.
And that's like a very candid reflection actually, because it's not an easy process to pinpoint objects that replicate or stand for every single moment of your life, essentially. Exactly. That's a really a tough conversation to be having with yourself. So thank you for sharing that. And I suppose that's a good caveat into trying to figure out what that story is and what you're wanting to tell us today. So can you tell us a little bit about what objects you did settle on and what that tells you a little bit about your time before care?
Yeah, sure. I think so. For the first one, I decided to go with a picture, and that's somewhere in my house. I will find it. And it's a picture of me in primary school. And the reason I went for that, it was just a reminder of how important education has always been for me anyway. And I think when I look at that picture, or the last time that I looked at it, I see a young person who's maybe not quite sure what's happening around her, not quite sure what the future holds, but a young person who still has hope. And I think the most hope that I had was like within my education. It was the one thing that brought me a lot of joy. I was able to do really well in school. So I think for me, that was the one thing that I could at least connect to time before going into the care system.
Sure.
Just that experience that I had within education, the joy that I always had, and just that desire actually to just do really well and make something of myself.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know, it's really important to say that, because being in care, obviously, we some of us lose that, like our care can be quite disruptive, and it's really special that you've managed to hold on to that from before care, and it's not disrupted that like passion for, as you said, education. That's something, as you'll know, working in and around the care system and being care experienced yourself, it can be uprooted a little bit. So
I think that's the thing. I can't speak for everyone who's been in the care system, obviously, but I think something that I've seen that tends to be common among a lot of people who go through the care system, you know, is constant moves, so placement moves, so moving from place to place, and sometimes that comes with changing schools, having new friends, and just a lot of distraction around you as a young person who's also trying to navigate life, also trying to understand who you are as an individual, what matters to you, what you're passionate about, who you want to become in the future. And I think for me, as much as there was a lot that was going on, I think there was always a desire to hold on to something, to just cling on to something and feel like I had control. And I think the moment that I realized that if I apply myself and I just work as hard as I can, I was able to at least achieve something. Not always getting the perfect grades, no.
Yeah.
But I think each time that I realized that I could work hard and actually get something, it just brought me a little bit of satisfaction and felt like, well, no one can take this away from me. At least it's something that I can, you know, that I'm responsible for and something that I can own, like, throughout life.
Yeah, and, like, being taken into care is a process that happens to us. There's not an awful lot of control in our lives when that happens. So it sounds like even in that sort of period of change, you were still able to find something that you had control of. And that in itself as a child is really difficult. Yeah. But to do that is in itself a massive achievement. When you were in this pre-care period, you talked about education as something that for you was about control and that sense of joy that you felt from it. Were you supported in education by your teachers then to sort of tap into that passion and for them to like encourage that passion to grow?
I would say definitely there's one I can think of. I'm always talking about my guidance teacher. And yeah, I would say, you know, she had a lot of faith, a lot of positive language to just offer me as and when, even during the difficult moments, particularly during my GCSEs and A-levels, actually. But I just felt as though she went above and beyond what was expected of her as a guidance teacher in just encouraging me and not really pushing too much and putting a lot of pressure on me, but actually reminding me that when I do work hard, I am able to achieve something. And there were some teachers, you know, like, you know, other people have mentioned before, who maybe didn't think that I could get to where I wanted to go to. There was one in particular, I shared my dream of becoming a lawyer with them, and they were really shocked that I was actually considering that, and they just felt that I wasn't good enough, and they expressed that to me. They didn't even sugarcoat it. So I think for me, it was a mixture. There were some teachers who were really, really supportive. And equally, there were some who maybe just didn't think, I don't know, maybe looking at the young person that I was at that time, they just couldn't see me becoming whoever I was saying I desire to become. Yeah. And I think actually reflecting back on that, I think maybe it's a lesson to learn that for young people that we are supporting, young people who may be going through difficult situations within, you know, at home or wherever they're staying, whether it's a children's home or whatever type of placement, actually, that's not, whatever we are seeing in that moment is not always a reflection of where their life is going to lead.
Absolutely.
And there's so much that a young person is still capable of doing. And I think that we lose nothing by encouraging that young person.
Absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think what you're saying as well is kind of really pertinent to conversations that Who Cares Scotland have had, and I'm sure many other organisations in this sector have had, is that sometimes it does just take that one key relationship. And if you can be that one person that could change a person's life, it should change a kid experienced child's life, then, you know, why wouldn't you take it?
Exactly.
And then for me as well, there's also something about checking that sort of unconscious bias that you maybe might have, and it's not necessarily a reflection on the child, but it's maybe you as a practitioner, your understanding of the situation and how that impacts how the child goes forward.
Yeah.
And you know, it's our duty as practitioners to manage that and be aware of that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And I think now being a mom, I think I'm constantly thinking about my responsibility towards my kids. And actually, you know, if my child is not doing well in school, I don't look at my child as being responsible for that. But actually, I try and figure out what's going on in my child's life and try and work out what I can do as a parent. Because actually, in that moment, I'm the adult. So I should take more responsibility in supporting my child. And I think, yes, teachers, whoever, you know, works with young people or supports care experience young people, I think, you know, we can take that responsibility and do what we can. And I think part of that is also, you know, communicating with other people around that young person's life. Yeah. And I think that's the role that my guidance teacher took. So there were a lot of conversations that I didn't have to go and explain my life story again, you know, mm-hmm. or explain what was going on, et cetera, et cetera. My guidance teacher took mm-hmm. that role to at least help me navigate life even outside of school. So, yeah. So
I think that's really important. I think something that's happening a lot more, and you'll know this yourself as being involved in The Promise, is mm-hmm. we're kind of moving towards a system that recognises that it takes a village to raise a child. And,
it does.
You know, yeah. that starts at school. It starts mm-hmm. in the social work relationships and all these yeah. this sort of lack of responsibility that's maybe been there in the system before. And mm-hmm. You know, it shouldn't just be up to an advocate, for example, to do this. It should be everyone in the child's life that's doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we kind of touched a little bit throughout that conversation about your time in care, and I think that's probably a good way to come into your second objects, which is yeah. your object representing your time in care. So please, yeah, tell us a little bit about your object. I can see it there. So
yeah. So this is going to be my last one.
That's okay.
Yeah, so my second one would have to be my Bible. I don't have the one that I had during my time in care. But I think, yeah, so I sort of went back and forth again, trying to work out what object to pick for that. And I think the reason I chose my Bible is because when I went into care, I was confused about what was going on. I'd never heard about the care system before
yeah.
or, you know, being in a residential children's home. So when I went into care, I went straight into a children's home and I lived with other young people. I obviously had a lot of stuff coming in and going, different social workers. So there was a lot that was going on. And I think now in hindsight, when I reflect back on my time in the care system, I think that maybe the one thing that was a constant was definitely, that was consistent rather, was my faith. And I think that in a way it helped me to maybe view my journey mm-hmm. in a different way that I would have if I didn't have that faith. And I think at times it brought me hope when I didn't yeah. have that hope. So for me, for example, being in the care system, my journey was slightly different to other young people who maybe were born in Scotland sure. or in the UK. So while being in a children's home, I still had to navigate the asylum seeking process.
Yeah.
So knowing that you're in the country temporarily mm-hmm. and there's no guarantee that you're going to be allowed to stay here permanently, that was really challenging for me.
Can imagine.
And also not even knowing how to navigate that system.
Because you're a child, right? Like, how are you expected to?
Yeah. So it was really difficult trying to do that. And then obviously, you know, looking around even in the home and thinking, okay, I think from just looking around, my culture is different from everybody sure, else. My yeah. experiences are different. The things that I was used to, they're completely different to mm-hmm. everybody else. And yeah, everybody in the unit, they were very welcoming. So it's not as if I was treated any differently or there was anything negative that I specifically experienced. But I think I was aware that my experience was different to other young people within that unit. Yeah. And as much as staff tried to support me around that, you know, I think I still needed something else. And I think sure. my faith for me, that was the thing. So just, yeah, just knowing that I matter, knowing that there's something greater, mm-hmm. in my life, there's something bigger that's going to happen outside of this. And just having hope that at some point when I leave the care system, I'm actually going, like, I actually have a future. At mm-hmm. some point, maybe I'm going to have a family. Maybe I'm going to go to university and graduate. I think all of that, when I think back now, I connect it to my faith, because whenever I was confused, I would sort of just think, okay, who am I? What am I doing? Where am I going?
Yeah.
So
I think, like, it kind of makes sense, certainly from my perspective across this table, because I'm mm-hmm. someone that's not of any faith, but mm-hmm. I think dealing with all that sort of uplifting of your life, all this sort of adjustment that you had to make, mm-hmm. it's no wonder that you found your faith as something that could guide you through
yeah.
all of this change that was happening.
Yeah. I think that's the thing as well, that I think the moment that social work services get involved in a young person's life, obviously everyone's experience of going into the care system is different. So again, I'm not speaking for everyone, but in that moment, a lot of adults around the young person are thinking, we want to make sure that you're safe. We want to make sure you've got accommodation. You're still going to school, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we need to write notes, et cetera, et cetera. Like, people focus on all those important things. Mm-hmm. But I think the moment that you're in a children's home and it's bedtime, you're in your bedroom, you're alone, and mm-hmm. you're now thinking, okay, who am I? What am I doing? Like, what am I doing tomorrow? What's the next thing that I'm going to do? I think for me, because it's what I had known before, that's what I ran to, because mm-hmm. I was just thinking, okay, I don't know what tomorrow holds.
Yeah.
You know, so I think for me, yes, that was important. And I think even just thinking back now to being somebody who's originally from Zimbabwe, my culture is important. And I think actually being in a children's home, I think maybe now thinking back, it would have been nice maybe to be able to connect with other young people who are care experienced but have come from different countries as well. Maybe other young people who are navigating the immigration system as well, so that maybe you can have conversations about your experience and what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. But for me at that time, I didn't have access to any of that. So yes, my faith was the only thing that I knew.
And that's a really important conversation. It's not actually something that we've not heard of on this podcast before. It's something that we heard in the first season through a couple of guests, that disconnect from culture is really important, especially because you just talked about being from Zimbabwe and now as an adult, it's really important to you, but you've got to do the groundwork after leaving the care system to reconnect to that culture. And you might disagree with that, but I would see this as a failure of the system, is making you have to do the work afterwards. You know, the system obviously can't get that like perfectly right, but they could put stuff in place to make that happen, so you don't have to undo the picking up of the pieces when you become an adult, whilst not navigating everything else in the world, you know?
Yeah, I think I would say I definitely agree. I think that there's still a lot that can be done. It you know, it's difficult to get it perfect, like you said, but I think there's a lot that can be done. And I think sometimes as well, maybe what people may not know is that as a young person, yes, having come from Zimbabwe, when you then grow up and you're around your Zimbabwean friends, you're also trying to fit into that group as a young person who's now grown up in the care system. And who knows what that specific group, what their understanding of the care system is, who knows what their perceptions may be and the stigma around care.
Absolutely.
So as you're approaching that group, you don't even know if they're going to receive you. So it can be really difficult to have that sense of belonging. So when you're around other care students, young people, if they don't come from the same cultural background as yourself, you can't feel as if you're an other or you're being othered by them. Then when you then go to some people who've come from the same country as yourself, who've gone through similar experiences, but they've grown up with mom and dad, you still feel as if you're being othered. So I think it can be really difficult. And you, like, eventually you end up feeling quite isolated because you feel like you don't belong in of those two groups. So I think more can be done. So for example, with me having my faith, more could have been done maybe to just support, like, going to church, because for me it mattered. You know, it didn't, you know, it doesn't mean that I needed everybody in the children's home to pray with me or to read the Bible or believe what I believe, but maybe a little bit more support around accessing your, like, your church, you know, because mine was quite, like, it was an hour away. So, you know, things like that, or if there are support groups specifically for people from the same country as yourself, or refugees, actually, where you can learn about, like, that process, I think that could have helped.
And it kind of strikes me as that would come in, you know, we talked about earlier about focusing on school and focusing on this and focusing on that and kind of doing the things that the system has to do, right? But to me, that connection to culture, connection to faith should be just as important as all these other things that they need to do as part of, like, the legislative responsibility as the state, you know, like, these are really important fundamental things in a child's life. They ultimately shape who you are and what you do as an adult. And to me, that could have been an easy conversation to just be like, how can we support you to go to church? You know, that doesn't need to be a difficult thing. It's not, it doesn't need to be a discussion at a children's eating table, for example. That could have just been something that was really easy, but it's perhaps not thought about.
I think some of the stuff with time, you know, we eventually had those conversations. I eventually got support. So it's not as if I never received any support at all. But I think in that moment, I actually think the moment that you enter into the care system, like your life doesn't stop for you to try and understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like life still goes on. So even, you know, if a young person goes into care during the like exam season, mm-hmm. like they can't miss exams and then sit their exams at a later stage. Life goes on. So yeah. I think we just have to like come together and try and work out what's the best way we can support this young person in this very moment mm-hmm. and still learn along the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just be receptive that they are mm-hmm. a person in their own right. You know, they're not just the care isn't just something that's happening to them. You know, there's other things, like you said, also just growing up and becoming a person in itself is massive. Yeah. But I think we've spoken a lot about faith and how it impacted you in the care system. Do you still feel that connection to your faith? Is it something so strong now in your adult life? Is the lack of support, I suppose, is what I'm asking. Has that impacted how in tune you are to your faith now?
I don't think it's affected it. I think now, looking at the bigger picture and all the years that have gone, makes me feel old. But I think I would say I'm in a good place now. So I think in terms of my faith, I know who I am. I know where I stand. I know what I believe in and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's been fine. I think looking back to my time within the care system, maybe it's worth mentioning my relationship with the children's home manager, Eleanor. Again, I always talk about her because I love her. She honestly has been like a mother to me from the time that I was in the care system. So, yes, I mentioned that maybe at the start, I think there could have been a little bit more support in terms of me accessing support, like support groups and, you know, going to church, etc. But actually, I think throughout the time that I was in the care system and even after, I think my relationship with her and other members of staff as well, but particularly Eleanor, I think that it helped me to still stay grounded and know who I am and, you know, to hold on to my own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that's not, you know, we didn't go to church together with Eleanor pray together or do any of that. But I think I just felt like she was supportive. She was firm when she needed to be firm. She was comforting as and when she needed to be comforting. She was, you know, a listening ear as and when she needed. And I never felt judged by her. And I felt that I could have conversations with her about what was affecting me, what I was worried about, all the fears that I had, all the dreams that I had, the goals that I had. There was nothing. I think when I think back to when I was in care and even after, I don't think there's ever been a moment where I've thought of something and then I've thought, I can't tell her. I think it's always been her. She's always been, you know, now it's changed, but at the time she was my emergency contact, you know, at work and everything else. So I think that relationship helped for me to really truly understand who I am and still hold on to my belief and everything else. So I would say, I think it hasn't affected anything. I think I'm in a good space, but I think it's mainly because of that relationship, I would say.
That's so powerful because that's really everything that we would want for someone in the system being involved with a care experienced person. That's kind of the blueprint almost of what we would expect. So that's amazing to hear that you've had that relationship and it's carried through beyond after care. I'm really pleased that that's the case for you and Eleanor. So we've kind of already started speaking about aftercare. So I suppose that brings us to our third and final object, which is where you are now, I guess, and representing everything that's come after. So tell us a little about your object for.
Yeah, sure. So my final object is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I'm just going to briefly read what it says because someone special gave this to me. So it says, Sheila, you're the strongest defender and claimer of human rights that I know. I am in awe of what you have achieved, and I am also excited about where you will go next. Getting to be a part of your story is one of the biggest privileges I'll have. You are doing it, Jamie.
Oh, I know. We all love Jamie, don't
Gosh,
we?
Gosh, I think everybody loves Jamie. But for me, I'm actually getting emotional. I didn't think I was going to get emotional. Oh, my God. I think for me, I am emotional.
It's okay, don't worry.
I think for me, it means the world to me. I've kept this little book. When I met my husband, I told him about it, showed him the book, took him to meet Jamie. You know, Jamie was at my wedding. So I met Jamie at Hawke Scotland, and he was my first manager. And yeah, I think it quickly evolved from being a manager to being a friend.
Yeah, I can talk to that experience as well. It's amazing.
Honestly, I think the biggest thing for me, when I think about this object or think about life after care, I think the first time that I sat down and spoke to Jamie, or one of our initial conversations, was around children and young people who are in the care system or who've been in the care system. You know, how do they stand up for their rights or defend their rights when they don't know what they are?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that was key, because whenever I would talk to Jamie about life before going into care, or even during, I would always tell him, oh, it was fine, it was okay. Because I didn't know. I think I'd never sat down to think about mm-hmm. my rights as a young person.
Yeah.
I'd never sat down to think about the fact that I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'd always thought, oh, this happened, you know, it happens to everyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, or maybe if somebody has treated you a certain way, but maybe they gave you a specific opportunity in life and I just felt like I owe them, or, mm-hmm. you know, I should be grateful. You know, I can't complain about mm-hmm. all this other stuff because they gave me this opportunity. But actually sitting down with Jamie, I think from the get-go, he was like, no,
yeah,
that's not on, you know. And I think everybody who knows him knows, you know, that the character, I think, for me, is what I think of every time I see this. That character where a person can sit with you and actually tell you, no, you deserve better than this.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't have been treated like that. And, you know, I've been able to share my hopes and dreams with Jamie as well. You know, the first time that I wanted to study a PhD, so I was doing my master's at the time, and I wanted to do a PhD, and my lecturer had talked to me about it, and I just felt like I wasn't good enough. That's the honest truth. I thought, why is my lecturer actually talking to me about this? Like, how can I do a PhD? And Jamie was the first person I went to, and I said, well, okay, there's this opportunity. What do you think? And I think now, thinking back, every conversation I've had with Jamie, I don't think there's ever been a time where Jamie has turned around and said, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So there are times where I might have wild dreams, and, you know, he will sort of help me to rein in and be like, okay, let's calm down. Let's think of a strategy. How can you actually achieve A, B, C, D? How are you going to do it? Or maybe could it look different to what you're envisioning right now? But he's never made me feel like I'm not good enough, I can't do it because of my care experience. But actually, there are times where Jamie has turned around and said, you are the product, like you are the thing that people need right now. Your mm-hmm. story matters, your voice matters. In moments where maybe I felt like maybe I should hide behind something, maybe somebody else, you know, maybe I've got a story to share, but maybe somebody else should say the story on my behalf.
Yeah.
There has been those conversations. So for me, this matters, and it's something that I treasure, because whenever I look at it, I think of that relationship. I'm reminded of my rights. And I think it almost reignites that flame within me
mm-hmm.
to stand, you know, for what I believe in and what I know is right as well,
sure.
in terms of other care experience young people, and to do what I can.
Yeah.
Obviously, I can't change everything.
No.
I don't think anyone can. But I think when I see this and when I read that message, it just charges me again and again to do what I can, to do
Absolutely.
My part, and to actually know that somebody sees what you're doing. It actually matters. You're making some sort of difference. So I've rambled on and on.
No, this is your space. You're not rambling. Don't be silly.
But so that's the mind.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's obviously translating into where you are now, because mm-hmm. you're doing a PhD in social policy about care experienced parents, a topic that is criminally under research. Like this research that you will be doing will be so, so important for Scotland and for the rest of the UK. And you're also working to keep the promise. So, mm-hmm. you know, this conversation that you've had with Jamie, however long ago that was when you were in mm-hmm. your beginning of your journey with Hooker Scotland, has clearly resonated right the way through to the work that you're doing now, which is amazing.
I think it really has. And I think also, I'm not even sure that Jamie realizes how much impact, you know, those words have had on my life, or just something as small as this, or what. I'm sure when Jamie thinks of this, probably thinks, oh, that's just a small thing. But to me, it's such a big thing. And actually, I think even in my relationships now, so, you know, friendships around me or any form of relationship that I have now, I do question whether or not this is a good relationship, good friendship. You know, I question how I'm being treated. I question whether my voice is being heard. I, you know, there are so many things that I question. And I think that now that when I look back at the young person before going into care who was just accepting anything and everything, and even the young person just after going into care who was so lost, so confused, really unsure of, you know, what was ahead, or really unsure of my future. And then I look at myself now, I don't have it all figured out, obviously.
No one does.
But I feel like I'm in a better place now. I'm now able to speak when I need to. I'm now able to pursue the things that matter to me.
Absolutely.
And I think that confidence has stemmed from those relationships, like my relationship with Jamie, and just having that, like having Jamie's number in my phone. And I think, I don't know if anyone else has talked about this, but when you've been in care and then you've moved on, it's not everybody who actually has friends. It's not everybody who has somebody that you can pick up the phone and talk to.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, leading up to my wedding, knowing that Jamie is coming, that was comfort, that was joy, that I don't know how else to explain that, considering we met through work. He was my manager, you know, so there wasn't any obligation for Jamie to be kind to me or to even care about me. So for me, yes, I think those relationships, there are so many, or I hope that there are many Jamies out there who actually see a young person and they don't take advantage of that young person. They don't just dismiss them because of their experience, but actually they acknowledge who you are as an individual, and they're there as and when you need whatever you need.
And I think the thing as well is like inspiring and encouraging you to do that on behalf of yourself as well. It's not just, you know, Jamie doing all the work. You're very much taking on what Jamie has said to you, and you're pulling that forward into decisions that you've made in your own life. You know, you're working, as I said, for the Promise Scotland and Children in Scotland, and you're doing a PhD. You know, you've taken that on board yourself, and you're carrying it through yourself, as much as Jamie being a pivotal relationship has been a spur to that. It's as much about who you are as an individual and the ability and the receptiveness, like separating what you just said of being that lost young person that you once was, hearing what Jamie has to say, but accepting it and actually believing it yourself is one thing, and then going out and doing it is another thing.
I think it takes time to get to that moment. I can't say it was instant. I think there were definitely a lot of times where I would actually question whether or not I could do whatever it was that I desired to do. But I think now I'm maybe in a place where I genuinely believe that if I don't know, whatever I desire to see in the lives of other care recipients, young people, so whatever struggles that I had, obviously I don't want other young people to experience those struggles when they're going through their care journey or even after. And now doing my PhD and looking at care experienced parents, whatever I've experienced, you know, despite the support that I've received, I still want to make sure that no one has to go through what I went through. So I think it's definitely a passion thing now where I'm not battling within myself and trying to figure out, am I good enough? Can I do this? It's now a case of, okay, what am I passionate about? What can I do about that?
Yeah.
And that's it.
I think that's both sides of it, is a recognition that like care experience is so very much lifelong, and it's not just the passion to try and do better for other generations that come after us, because I think that's actually a shared feeling for anyone that's been in care. I don't know anyone that's been in care that doesn't want to try and make the system better for themselves, but also doing it in a way that works out all the sort of lingering effects or negative and positive that care has on us as an adult. And I think that's very reminiscent of what you're talking about and where you're at now.
Yeah.
So I think before we wrap up, I think it would be interesting to just hear a little bit about your research, because I don't think people know an awful lot about care okay. experienced parents. Mm-hmm. It's something that Who Cares Scotland has talked about mm-hmm. a lot, but I don't think in the wider sector it's out there. So I think it would be good to yeah. talk a little bit about what your research is before we come to an end of the episode.
Sure. Yeah. So for my PhD, I am looking at care experienced parents in England and Scotland. So there are a couple of things that I'm doing. So I've been interviewing care experienced parents in the two nations. And I think I'm trying to work out whether the experiences are similar, because we know the level of support that care experienced young people receive in England compared to Scotland. There are some differences there. So I'm doing that. And I'm also interviewing corporate parents who've worked directly with care experienced parents. So that could be personal advisors, you know, or anybody. Yeah, so anyone who's specifically worked with a care experienced parent. And then I'm also doing a policy comparison between Scotland and England. So I've finished. I'm still open to interviewing other care experienced parents. I'm a bit cautious of, you know, sort of turning someone away.
Yeah.
But I've got a good enough number
yeah.
of interviews that I've done mm-hmm. In terms of care experienced parents. I am still interviewing corporate parents in Scotland. I think in England, I've definitely finished. I've interviewed quite a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think I can interview anymore. But in Scotland, I'm still open to interviewing other corporate parents who've worked with care experienced parents here in Scotland. And then I'm doing my policy analysis. And I think the main thing for me is trying to work out what happens when a young person, you know, realizes they're about to become a parent.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm looking even before that moment. So how is a young person prepared for parenthood?
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at the level of support that they receive during, you know, that moment when they are waiting mm-hmm. and they are aware that they're now going to become a parent. So in terms of my interviews, I've interviewed both. So not only, so existing research at the moment has looked at mothers mainly,
yeah.
but I was quite interested in interviewing any parent.
Sure.
So I'm interviewing everyone. Yeah. And looking at how they're supported during that journey, how they're supported in parenting. And there are a couple of theories that I'm looking at. So social capital, and basically that's looking at how much access you have and what form of social capital you actually have as a care experienced young person. And a lot of times, care experienced young people, they don't, you know, yeah, it's not the same for everyone. But yeah, you know, you don't normally have that village that mm-hmm. we spoke about mm-hmm. earlier on. And then looking at solidarity. So, mm-hmm. for example, the government, when they take a young person and that young person goes into the care system, yes, the government or the state will look at the rights of that young person in that moment as a young person. But I think that the government should look as far as like the rest of that young person's life. Mm-hmm. So even when they become an adult, so they've gotten a right to having a family when they are still a child, but equally they have a right to have a family of their own when mm-hmm. the time comes, if they choose to become a parent,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah, looking at that, where the government stands in terms of supporting a young person throughout that life cycle.
Yep.
And then the third one is attachment. So especially for young people who've experience multiple placement moves,
mm-hmm.
how does that affect their ability to form and maintain relationships?
Yep.
And then how does that affect their relationships with their own children as sure. well? So yeah, so that's my research. Yeah,
I think that's really exciting. It was something yeah. that I was interested in, and something I've reflected on. I'm not a mother yet, but mm-hmm. you know, when you've been through the care system,
yeah.
your understanding of what it means to be a parent is different.
Yeah.
Like, that's just fundamentally a fact, and there's obviously no book to parenting, but
yeah.
understanding how to navigate in a system mm-hmm. when you've been institutionalized and all these kind of things, and then the prospect of becoming a parent is inherently more difficult for
yeah.
people like you and I. So I just thought that was really important, and people needed to hear that conversation.
Yeah, thank you
for that. So yeah, just to kind of wrap up, the sort of question that we've been asking for everyone at the end of the episodes would be, now that you've been on Objects and mm-hmm. you've gone through the process and have talked through your objects,
mm-hmm.
if you were to, first of all, what was the experience like for you?
Okay.
And if you were to give advice to anyone else that was thinking about coming on the podcast, what would your advice be?
Yeah, my advice, bring some tissues, definitely. No, jokes aside, I think I've definitely loved my experience. I think I would say, think about it and, you know, within yourself, just like ask whether or not you're ready to share your story. And also work out how much of it you are comfortable sharing with everyone. And then I think, and then in terms of picking whatever objects that you're going to pick, I think pick what matters to you, because it's your story, it's your life, your experience. And yeah, maybe watch. So what I did was to watch other videos before, so other guests that you've had. I think that can help. So just watching and listening to other guests. And then I think, I think I've really enjoyed it. And I think actually, I don't think I've come across a podcast that's similar to this one. I don't think I have.
It's good for us.
And I don't think I have. And I actually think it's funny because it's only in that moment where someone asks you to locate a specific object that sums up a time in your life. And actually, I was thinking about the time that, like, for a lot of young people who maybe move from place to place and they have their stuff in bin bags and you know, there's so much. When I was looking through my stuff, there's so much that I couldn't find, and I actually don't even know where it is.
Yeah,
I don't even know if somebody chucked it in the bin, or, you know, because who knows, right? So I think, and then now, funny enough, being a mom with my little ones, the three that I have, I know where all their stuff is. There's so much that I treasure, and my husband is always saying, do we need to keep this? Like, do we need all these pictures?
Yes,
even
you do.
Pictures, you know, I was looking for pictures that I could bring, but I was struggling. But actually now with my kids, I have so many pictures, and I think it's almost a case of having that fear that I might one day wake up and not have that. So it's like, no, let me just take another picture. Let me just take another one.
Yeah.
So yes, so I've really loved it. And yeah, I think just figure out what you're comfortable sharing. And yeah, if you feel ready to share your story, then definitely do it.
Brilliant. I think that's amazing advice to finish up on. I've really enjoyed having a conversation with Sheila. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been lovely meeting you as well.